Here's a question that might keep you up at night. If you could design society's rules from scratch, but had no idea whether you'd be born rich or poor, healthy or disabled, brilliant or ordinary, what kind of world would you create? This isn't just philosophical musing. It's the revolutionary thought experiment that John Rawls used to transform how we think about fairness. His 1971 masterwork didn't just shake up academic philosophy, it rewired our entire conversation about justice, influencing everyone from Supreme Court justices to policymakers debating healthcare reform. The genius lies in its simplicity. Strip away all the advantages and prejudices that cloud our judgment, and suddenly we see what fairness really looks like. Picture yourself in a room with others, tasked with creating the rules for a new society. The catch? You know absolutely nothing about who you'll be once you enter it. You don't know your race, gender, wealth, abilities, or even your values. This is what Rawls calls the original position, and the ignorance that blinds you is deliberate. It's the only way to eliminate bias. When you can't rig the game in your favor because you don't know which player you'll be, something remarkable happens. You start thinking differently. Would you create a society where the wealthy get all the advantages if you might be born poor? Would you deny healthcare to the disabled if you might become one of them? Suddenly, the utilitarian calculus, sacrificing a few for the greater good, feels far too risky. You wouldn't gamble with someone else's suffering when that someone might be you. This isn't about being altruistic. It's about being rational under uncertainty. From behind the veil, Rawls argues we choose two fundamental principles. First, everyone gets equal basic liberties: freedom of speech, voting rights, freedom of thought, protection from arbitrary arrest. These aren't negotiable or tradable for economic benefits. Consider surveillance debates. Even if monitoring everyone's communications might catch more criminals, it fundamentally violates our basic liberties. Those freedoms stand as walls that can't be breached, regardless of utilitarian math. The second principle tackles economic inequality through two parts. Positions must be genuinely open to everyone, not just formally, but practically. True fairness demands we level the playing field so talent and effort, not family wealth, determine success. Then comes Rawls's difference principle. Inequality is only justified when it benefits those at the bottom. If allowing entrepreneurs to earn millions raises wages for the lowest paid workers, that inequality passes. If it just concentrates wealth at the top while the bottom stagnates, it fails. For centuries, utilitarianism dominated moral philosophy: maximize happiness for the greatest number. But it treats society like a single person where pain in one area offsets pleasure elsewhere. Rawls saw the fatal flaw. This does not take seriously the distinction between persons. Your suffering isn't canceled by my joy. Each person possesses an inviolability that can't be overridden for the greater good. A theory of justice must explain why people actually care about fairness. Rawls identifies three developmental stages. Children first learn morality through loving parental relationships. When parents show genuine love, children reciprocate and accept moral guidance through trust and attachment. Next comes the morality of association. We adopt various roles: student, friend, teammate, citizen, and begin seeing others' perspectives. Through social participation, we develop empathy and understand how cooperative systems function. Finally, we reach the morality of principles, acting from principles we'd endorse regardless of personal attachments. This represents moral maturity, acting justly because it's right, not because it benefits us or those we love. When institutions treat us fairly, we naturally develop loyalty to them. Consider your own experience. When systems seem fair, whether workplace, school, or government, you willingly follow their rules. But when institutions appear rigged, when some escape consequences others face, social trust collapses. Fairness isn't just morally right, it's psychologically sustainable in ways exploitation never can be. Rawls doesn't prescribe capitalism or socialism. He establishes criteria any economic system must meet. The difference principle permits inequality only when it benefits everyone, especially those at the bottom. If entrepreneurs earning millions create jobs and raise wages for the lowest paid, that inequality is justified. But if wealth pools at the top while the bottom stagnates, it fails the test. Markets remain valuable for efficiency and freedom, but need guardrails. Rawls envisions government operating through four branches: maintaining competitive markets, ensuring full employment, providing a social minimum through income supplements, and preventing wealth concentration through progressive taxation and inheritance limits. Extreme wealth concentration undermines political equality. When billionaires fund campaigns while others barely afford to vote, equal basic liberties become hollow. Progressive inheritance taxes prevent wealth dynasties from corrupting democracy. The framework asks us to evaluate economic policies by a radical standard. Do they improve conditions for those with the least? Not average prosperity or GDP growth, but the concrete reality of the worst-off members of society. Even just societies harbor serious injustices. When can citizens break the law? Rawls offers clear criteria. Civil disobedience must be public, nonviolent, address substantial injustices, especially violations of basic liberties, and follow exhausted political channels. It's an appeal to the majority's sense of justice, not revolution. Rosa Parks refusing her bus seat exemplified this perfectly. Public, nonviolent, addressing clear violations of equal rights after decades of failed appeals. She wasn't rejecting democracy, she was calling America to honor its principles. Political obligation doesn't mean blind obedience. In democracy, ultimate authority rests with the people and the justice principles they'd endorse from a fair position. When laws clearly violate those principles, civil disobedience reminds us of deeper commitments. It's political speech declaring these principles matter more than convenience or order. When normal channels fail and fundamental rights hang in the balance, breaking an unjust law can become the most patriotic act possible. Civil disobedience strengthens democracy by preventing injustices from becoming entrenched. Rawls provided a practical framework for thinking about fairness that balances liberty and equality, individual rights, and common good. His ideas permeate contemporary debates about healthcare, education, climate policy, and economic inequality. When we ask what kind of health system we'd choose without knowing our own health status, we're invoking Rawlsian thinking. The theory has faced challenges from libertarians, property rights concerns, communitarians, to abstract, and feminists initially ignored gender justice, critiques that have enriched rather than diminished its significance. In our age of widening inequality and deepening polarization, Rawls's vision remains urgently relevant. It challenges us to look beyond narrow self-interest and ask, what principles could we justify to anyone, including the least advantaged? Justice isn't about maximizing total wealth or happiness. It's about creating a world we could defend to anyone who asks, why should I accept this? When we can answer that question honestly, from behind the veil of ignorance, we glimpse what a truly just society might look like.